Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode of All In on Offense on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me today is the passing game coordinator and quarterbacks coach at Ohio Powerhouse, Division II Powerhouse, Toledo Central Catholic, Josh Lindke. Coach Lindke, great to have you here on the podcast.
Yeah, Keith, I appreciate you having me on. It's really a pleasure to come on and talk ball and maybe give a little nugget or two to anybody that needs it, and hopefully somebody can get something out of it. And I'm really fired up to be on.
I know Coach Dempsey out there, he does a great job. I've known him, I think, since I was a high school football coach and then had the opportunity to recruit Toledo Central Catholic. So you guys have just a great program, very storied program. I've done a lot. I've had some great players there for our listeners. If you would, just tell us a little bit about your program.
Yeah, man, Central, as you said, Central Catholic, when you think of, you know, high school football in Northwest Ohio, Toledo Central Catholic is one of the first programs that comes to mind. And that's really a testament to Coach Dempsey. And, you know, he's, you know, for a young coach like myself and for really any young coach, he's a guy that people can look up to and kind of when they're kind of trying to make their way and trying to see how to really build a program from bottom up. Because when he took over Central, it wasn't the powerhouse certainly that it is today. So he's done this from the ground up and been doing it for 20 years now. This was his 20th season. So, and obviously, you know, a ton of talented players have rolled through there, you know, from the likes of Deshaun Kaiser and Keith Tolbridge and guys like that, guys that are in and out of the NFL. And, you know, so when you go over there, it's funny, when I had my first interview with Coach Dempsey, you go over there and it's just, you walk in and you immediately understand why, you know, Central's had the success that they've had from the numerous championships and state title appearances and league titles. You know, you can understand there's a sense of urgency in the building constantly. And for a program that constantly wins, to have that sense of urgency is something that's really a testament to Coach Dempsey. And then along with his assistant coaches, I mean, he's got really, really, really good minded people around him. And just thinking from our side of the ball, every position coach on our side of the ball has been a coordinator or a head coach at some point. And that same goes for the defense with a testament to a few guys. So, you're really putting a lot of good football minds around people and just a lot of dudes that want to work. I mean, that's the biggest thing is you come in and you know when you're there, you better work. Because if you don't work, you're going to get passed up by somebody on staff. And so you got to be on your toes at all times. And that's a testament to Coach Dempsey and the program that he's built. And certainly none of that would be possible without the great players that have rolled through there. And, you know, it's a blessing, but, you know, we've always got the target on our backs, but we kind of don't really rebuild. We just reload, you know, so lose a lot of great players and try to hop back on the next season and roll through again. So, you know, it's a train that's moving fast, but, you know, I'm glad to be on it now.
Coach, tell us a little bit about your background. And, you know, I know for you, it started as a student assistant coach at BG with Coach Babers, but tell us a little bit about what's brought you to this point as a coach.
Yeah. So I grew up a bunch of different places. When I was younger, moved a bunch of different places. I was born in Toledo. We moved, lived in Louisiana for a little while, lived in Illinois, and then we ended up finding a home back here in Toledo. We've been here for a number of years now, over 15 years. And so I went to Anthony Wayne High School, played football, baseball there, played for Craig Smith, who was a longtime coach at AW for about 19 years, played baseball for Mark Nell, who's a very well-known baseball coach in the state of Ohio. Two very different styles, but two guys that have been instrumental in my development and getting into the coach profession. And then when I ended up, you know, playing college baseball for a year at Rochester College up in Michigan, just outside of Detroit a little ways, and ended up hurting my arm, dealt with some arm issues, and really had zero idea what I wanted to do with my life, which was kind of funny. My girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, you know, I tried to figure out for months about what I wanted to come home and do. Ended up going to Bowling Green, and Craig Smith, who was still the head coach, Anthony Wayne, ended up having an opening on his staff. So I ended up getting hired as a receivers coach over there, and he ran the wing T. So being the receivers coach in a wing T offense was a lot of blocking drills, to say the least. But it was really good just for my development in terms of being a young – I was a young 19-year-old. I mean, I was fresh out, and, you know, so getting started early. But that was instrumental to me. And I ended up being the receivers coach there for 2 years. We did some good things, but that was just me, you know, my first start interacting with the kids and that kind of nature. And I wanted to try my hand. Once I started to roll into the coaching profession, so to speak, I wanted to try my hand at the college game and see if I could start making some connections there and see where that could go. So I ended up just writing a letter to the director of football ops at BG and ended up getting a call back and got on as a student assistant at Bowling Green under Coach Babers. And that was the year 2015, and ended up winning the MAC title that year. And that was really where I grew my football knowledge, just in terms of learning the spread offense, in terms of learning tempo, in terms of reading defenses, coverages, fronts, blitzes, et cetera. You know, just being around those guys that were in the college game for a while, you know, just being around a college staff like that and being, you know, one of the nation's leading offenses and explosive plays and number of plays per game and yards and whatnot, that really just kind of opened my eyes to what spread football was. Because I was a wing T guy. So ended up getting on at that staff, and I worked directly under Andrew Sauter, who is now Kent State's offense coordinator. Sean Lewis was there as well as the OC at Bowling Green. So I learned so much football from those two, just being around those guys every day and really just learning the work ethic that it needs to take to just be a football coach in general. Because when you're a young guy, you think you've got all the answers and you know everything, but I had zero idea of making that jump from Anthony Wayne to Bowling Green in terms of just the amount of work that needs to be put in. So we ended up going on and we beat a couple Power 5 schools that season, and I was working directly with the receivers and the quarterback, and really just my knowledge of coaching those two positions grew immensely in that amount of time. And then that staff ended up moving on, going to Syracuse, we won the MAC title, and Coach Jinks' staff came in. So I stayed on and worked with Coach Jinks' staff, and then ended up working directly under Seth Dagey, who's now an offensive analyst out at USC. Coach Jinks is the running backs coach out there now, after he unfortunately got let go at Bowling Green. But so I worked directly under those guys. I worked with Kevin Kilmer, who was the OC at the time. Seth was like the main guy that I worked with. And then Andy Padrone as well, who's now coaching high school ball back in Texas. And I worked directly with those three, and just my X's and O's really started to improve. And I actually, you know, Seth told me one time, which he's one of my mentors that I hold near and dear, that's helped me along the way. He told me, you make of it what you want of it. So as a student assistant, you're kind of in a position of, you can make what you want of it. You can be a guy that just kind of shows up and wants to be around on game day, comes to practice, or you can be a guy that shows up and grinds, and you basically become another quality control coach, so to speak, because at those lower levels of FBS ball, it's hard to find guys like that. It's hard to find positions on staffs that are just quality control guys like they do at the higher level, or the bigger schools, I should say. And so, you know, I made of it what I wanted it. So I grinded and I worked. And, you know, the more you work, the more those coaches see and they give you more responsibility. So by the time I left, we had what we called Friday night ball. So I was basically coaching all the young receivers that came in, all the freshman guys, which they trusted me to do that. And that was just because of pure work ethic that they, you know, instilled into me. And I, like I said, like Daggy told me, I made it what I wanted of it. So I was there day in and day out, working my tail off. And, you know, so my X's and O's game improved a ton in that time. So then Dan Chipka, who I knew from Anthony Wayne, ended up getting the job at Toledo St. Francis DeSales. And I was in kind of in that middle period of graduating and not knowing I wanted to become a GA, but I also had a fiance and was going to be getting married soon. So I was in that middle point of, I need to go make some money for a little bit to pay for the wedding. And so decided to go teach and get back into high school ball just to make some money for a couple of years, as funny as that sounds, because you're making a little bit more money teaching than you would be as a GA somewhere. But so I went back and taught and ended up getting in at St. Francis, and Dan Chipka hired me as his offensive coordinator. And so that was my first, you know, kind of big test in terms of running a room. commanding my side of the ball, so to speak, and being a head coach on my side of the ball. And it was a great learning tool. We struggled. We took over a program that had not won a lot of games. They won one game in, 3 years. And it used to be a very storied program when Dick Cromwell was there. And, yeah, very storied program. And so we took over a program that was just – they just needed to learn how to play football again. And we were dealing with a lot of things that you don't think you need to deal with. And I was coming from a game where – in college ball where it's a whole different ball game up there, just winning a MAC title. And we struggled our first year with Coach Jinks, but it's just a different level. So now I'm jumping back down to the high school level. And even though it's a high level of ball, you know, Division II over here and the track, which is a phenomenal conference, we were at the bottom of the totem pole and we had to work our way up. Ended up going 2-8 our first year. And one thing that, you know, Coach Jinks told me, he said, never try to fit a square peg into a round hole. And, you know, when I learned that, what he meant by that was, is don't try to just run the offense that we ran here at Bowling Green and try to fit those guys. So we were more of a single wing type. We ran a lot of buck sweep. We did some RPO things. We never really had the quarterback to do the things that we wanted to do. And but we had really good running back. We had guys up front that were really good. So we ran the football and we ran the heck out of it and did a lot of good things, led the track and rushing 2 years in a row. You know, so, and then we improved to 4-6 the following year. And that first year, we were just trying to find a way to be in games because they were in the running clock scenario, I think 9 out of their 10 games the previous season. And what I mean by that is, for people that aren't familiar, at high school football in the state of Ohio, if you're down by 30 or more, it's a running clock. And we, the previous year before we took over, St. Francis is in a running clock scenario, I think 9 out of 10 games, which is a lot. I mean, that means you're getting your teeth kicked in almost every game. And so we were just at that point now trying to learn how to be in games. And we were in a lot of games, maybe could have finished the year 6-4, 5-5, ended up finishing 2-8, but did a lot of good things. And then the next year we had a little bit better team, some more skilled guys on the outside, skilled quarterback that could run it and throw it a little bit. So we ended up finishing 4-6. And again, we're a couple wins away from scooting into the playoffs. And then at that time, you know, I'm still, during this time, I'm still trying to contemplate, you know, when and if can I get back into the college game? And that's kind of my ultimate goal, is to get back into the college game. But I ended up getting a call from Coach Dempsey. And like I said, to bring it all the way back, Coach, you know, when Coach Dempsey, you know, when he gives you a call, I mean, you listen. I mean, he's, like I said, he's the cream of the crop and the top of the echelon in terms of high school football coach in the state, not just in Northwest Ohio, but the state of Ohio. And so he gave me a call and offered me a job to come be the pass game coordinator, quarterbacks coach. And, you know, I was, you know, really honored by that and jumped all over that. And it was kind of unique because I was in a position of calling plays and being the sole OC. And I'm a young guy. I'm 23, 24 years old as an offense coordinator in the Three Rivers Athletic Conference. And that's kind of a big deal. And so, you know, I you know, had to take a step back, so to speak, because Coach Dempsey is the one that calls the plays over here. But, you know, Central's been searching for a guy, you know, or searching, I should say, for, you know, a pass game, and you know, in the last couple of years. And that's kind of, you know, with talking to Coach Dempsey, that's kind of the thing that he felt that has held us back in the last couple of years from winning a state title, is having a pass game that can be consistent, having an RPO game that can be consistent. And that's, he knew my background from Bowling Green. And there was a guy that I worked with on staff named Bo Martin that worked at Toledo St. Francis with me. He was at Central, actually left the year before I did. So he ended up putting in a good word, and the rest was kind of history from there. I ended up getting hired at Central. And, you know, that was the task: improve our tempo, improve the quarterback play, and improve the pass game. And those were kind of three areas in which, you know, I studied a whole lot and spent a numerous amount of time with when I was at Bowling Green under Coach Babers and Coach Jinks. You know, so that was kind of the mentality going in, and that's what we did this past year. We ended up going 13-1, lost in the state semis to, you know, eventual state champion Cincinnati LaSalle, you know, but we improved our pass game. Quarterback ended up throwing for like 27 touchdowns this year, nearly 2,000 yards, which hasn't happened in a while. To no offense of any previous quarterback, it's just, you know, there was a lot of times where that throwing element was not involved with Toledo Central Catholic, so that's kind of where that came into play. You know, and we did some really good things. And like I said, ended up losing the state semis, won the track, went 10-0, you know, quarterback got second team, all league, which was good. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at now. And that's kind of where I ended up. And, you know, like I said, taking that step back and kind of having to humble myself a little bit and not be a sole play caller. But this has been the best thing that I've done for my career. The amount of football that I've learned from Coach Dempsey and everybody else on staff, and Ryan Brown, our defensive coordinator, he's a wizard. And if you ever get the chance to talk to him, you need to. And anybody listening gets a chance to talk to him, you need to, because that guy really, really knows football and really knows how to study an offense and break an offense down. And just the things that I learned from each guy on staff with taking that step back, so to speak, in job title at a young age, because at a young age, you think to yourself, you know, young coaches out there, you think to yourself, I got to climb the ladder and I got to climb it quickly. Whereas that's really not necessarily the case. And in my instance, I thought that the overall being with a great program like Central Catholic and learning under Coach Dempsey, it's the best of both worlds. If I end up wanting to get a college job, there's no guy in high school ball better than to give me a recommendation or to try to make that jump in Coach Dempsey. And if I want to stay in high school ball and be a head coach eventually one day, there's no better guy than to learn under than Coach Dempsey. So, you know, it's really been a win-win for me, and I'm really, really happy to be here and really fired up to just kind of see where things go.
A couple things I want to point out, and thanks for sharing that story. Some very interesting things there, and we are going to get into your topic of prepping the quarterback from week to week. But I think a couple important things I'd like to point out to our listeners, especially some of those young coaches out there. Number one, just the attitude you took that you made your situation what you wanted. And I could think back to, you know, we kind of had that situation at BW with interns and student coaches and guys basically making nothing to be out there and help us. And, you know, we had those guys range from exactly what you said, a guy who would show up and be at practice every day and be there on game day, but didn't necessarily integrate him and himself into, he was helpful, but he wasn't a key cog in it, to some of those guys who'd be around all day and you know, anytime they'd have a break between class and getting involved and helping plan things, getting the game plan, watch film, break things down, draw cards, whatever it might be. You know, that's really how you get your start in this game, is you have to be willing to take the bull by the horns and show your worth. And I mean, you're going to make some mistakes along the way, but not be afraid to get in there and dig in and not worry about a title or what's going on. So I think that's a very important point that you brought up. And I think the next thing is, you know, you just talking about your staff that you're a part of right now, and you've been able to be a part of some really good things. And even where you're at right now, you'd like to be at the college level. You certainly could go out probably after your experience at Toledo St. Francis and, you know, find a coordinator job somewhere and, you know, do those kinds of things. But you're in an incredible learning situation now too, where you have all these guys with a lot of experience around you that are not only just pushing you, but you're able to get some mentorship from. And I think, you know, more and more, a lot of younger coaches who want to climb that ladder quickly, maybe make the move away from places where they can really learn and really be mentored by some older coaches, and maybe not the full title or maybe not everything they think is important. But I would place more value on the side of being at a place like you're at rather than having a title. I don't know how you feel about that at this point in your young career.
Yeah, absolutely. You hit on all the points there that when it comes to being a young coach and, you know, cutting your teeth in this game is hard. I mean, it's really hard. I mean, there was times I can remember back when I was at Bowling Green and I was with Coach Babers, and there was times I was snapping balls at the quarterback in practice, and there was times where I was going and getting water bottles. Or there was times when I was down in the equipment room helping the equipment guys, just because when you're at that type of job, that's what you got to do. And you got to be a guy, and I hate to say it, but you, at that time, you got to be a yes, sir guy. You just got to do what people need you to do. And then what I mean by taking it a step further and doing what you want with it, with your opportunity, anytime you get that opportunity to go talk to that coach that you're working directly for and talk scheme, talk X's and O's, anytime that you get that opportunity to go the extra mile for somebody, that stuff becomes noticed. And that extra work and that hard work that you put in becomes noticed, because you got to cut your teeth somewhere and you got to put in that grunt. Where a lot of young guys that I talk to kind of want to just either A, jump from job to job, or B, rise very quickly. And, you know, the thing that I've kind of prided myself on is that, you know, every move that I've made, I've been a lot of different, I'm 26 years old, so I'm still a young guy. But I've been to, you know, four different places now in a matter of that time. But every move that I've made has been really strategic. It's not just to climb the ladder to get that better title. Yeah, you may have a title at a school that doesn't win any games. But so what does that title really mean? You guys are going 0-10 every year, whatever it may be. But you could be a position coach at another school that's competing for state championships every year. And that's kind of the way that I, you know, looked at it and was kind of just like, you know, I want to surround myself with really good people and be around guys that work really hard. I mean, there's no, you know, everybody's got their different way of doing it, but I knew that that's what I was going to get when I went to Central Catholic. And like I said, when you walk in the building over there and you walk into a meeting with Coach Dempsey, you just know that you better step your game up and you know that you better bring the work ethic, because everybody else there is busting their tail to make sure that we win on Friday night. And that's all that matters. And so it causes you in turn to become a master at what you're doing. And my job was to coach the quarterbacks and to get our tempo right and to get our pass game right. And you become a master at that. So instead of just looking at the overall picture, I could really hone in and focus on one thing. And I love coaching quarterbacks. I love coaching receivers. So it was kind of an opportunity for me, which was unique because, you know, I am young and I'm trying to climb the ladder. So guys that aren't in the game, they would ask me, they're like, why'd you take a step back or why'd you take a job demotion? Where guys that are around football, guys that understand, know what's going on, they said, you know, you took a promotion, you know, and in our eyes, you know, coaches know that just because it's the type of people that you're around and it's the type of program that you're around. And you want to, if you're a young guy trying to climb the ladder, surround yourself with really good people, surround yourself with guys that work hard, and hook on to a really good program, win a lot of football games. And that's your ticket to climb the ladder somewhere, you know. And it's a lot of grunt work goes into it. A lot of long hours. And my wife has been great. We were high school sweethearts. So she's known the deal since I got into it. Cause that's the other thing. You got to have a good girl on the other end that's going to know you got to work long hours. So, you know, like at Central, we work, I mean, we work like a college program and it's a lot of long hours. And but you know what? The product shows on Friday night, and that's, you know, your hard work pays off on Friday night. And it's very rewarding. You know, this past season was one of the most rewarding seasons I've had in my short career. And, you know, for some guys that might not be the case because you're quote unquote taking a step back in job title, but really that's not what it's about. I mean, like I said, it's about surrounding yourself with good people, getting to know ball, you know, winning a lot of football games in the meantime.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll finish up. I do want to revisit, you know, your experiences and what you learned from beyond ball from some of those coaches. But I do want to get into topic for today. So we're going to focus on just that week to week prep for the quarterback and, you know, kind of outline the work you put into it, what you're doing, the tools you put together for them to prepare them, your approach in practice and film study and all those things. So let's just start it at the beginning of the week here and, you know, what you're looking at as you break down that opponent, you know, and your thoughts, you know, directly on that quarterback and what you want to try to do to, you know, focus your work and his work over the next week so that Friday night he's out there doing everything he needs to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So my job on huddle, you know, Saturdays after a game, and I'll backtrack, I guess I should say, or I'll get all the way back to, I guess I should start from Saturday to, I'll go Saturday to Saturday, you know, so my half of the workload in terms of which then correlates to my guy's workload, you know, the quarterbacks is, you know, I put in all the coverages and what type of coverage are we seeing from that team on, you know, from game to game. And really the one thing that I learned from being over here is the more that you break down the information, the better chance of knowing and understanding your opponent you're going to have. I mean, I really learned that from Coach Dempsey and Coach Brown. The amount of hours that we spend on huddle, just breaking people down on Saturday, putting in the information in the huddle, breaking down the blitzes, the tendencies, the coverages, the slants, the angles, all those different things, the fronts, that's really going to give you a good idea of what you're going to see for the following, you know, Friday night for whoever your opponent may be. And so that's kind of like how our Saturday is spent, you know, and then you run a coverage report. So I'll run a coverage report, Coach Dempsey run a coverage report, and we'll see, you know, what percentage is a team playing, let's say, cover three? What percentage is a team playing cover four? What percentage are they rolling the cover three wide or rolling the cover three short, you know, where they bring that backside safety and roll him to the field and then roll the short side safety down for any type of jet sweep. How often are they doing that? So we'll make a coverage report sheet. That way we can get a really good sense of what a team is doing from not only a game-to-game basis, but breaking it down even further. What are they doing from a series-to-series base? What are they doing? You know, and this is typical football speak for a lot of guys, but it really, really helps out when you then interject this into your quarterback's mind. So just getting a good sense of that. And then Sunday, obviously, is, you know, continue to game plan. We're starting to get our kinks worked out of what we want to do for the week. And so then Sunday, I will make basically a back half report. So a linebacker and DB coverage report for my quarterback to see. During that time, I kind of list, you know, what are their top coverages for 3x1? What are their top coverages for 2x2? What are their top coverages if we go 2x1 with an H-back into the game? That way, that can kind of get our quarterback's mind thinking, okay, this is what I'm going to see against 3x1. This is what I'm going to see against 2x2. And now he knows, okay, I got a 2-high structure and 2x2. When we go 3x1, I'm going to get a 1-high structure. So, for instance, like when we played Cincinnati LaSalle in the state semis, we, just from that breakdown, we knew 3x1, we were going to get cover 3. So my guy knew, okay, I'm going to get cover 3 to 3x1. Now to 2x2, I'm going to get cover 2 in a 2-high structure. So here's how we're going to attack it here. So that way, because I think when you teach your quarterback in the pass game, the first thing he's got to come out is he's got to check where the safeties are at, in my opinion. He's got to know if it's a 1-high, 2-high look. Or you could be getting some kind of cloud coverage, nickel coverage that could cause you to have a 3-high look. But rarely are we ever going to see that unless we're in passing downs late in the game. That coverage report that I'll make, I'll interject that into basically a full defensive breakdown for my guy. And what I'm looking at is we run a lot of zone read and we run a lot of power read, which is Coach Dempsey will talk about that at one of his Glazier clinics as well. We run a lot of quarterback power read. So I'm not only looking at the DBs from a pass game perspective and the linebackers from a pass game perspective or that extra DB and nickel guy. I'm also looking at the two DNs as well because I want to see how is he going to play zone read? How is he going to play power read? Instead of just telling your guy, hey, make this decision, you know, and 0.1 seconds or however quick it happens on Friday night, where instead he kind of has an idea about how this cat from Toledo St. John's is going to play zone read every time that we zone read it or power read it, which is, you know, really –
Well, let me step back here. I got a question about your coverage here. And I think those are, we'll talk about that too, some really important points about how they're going to play the run game. But stepping back to your coverage and your coverage report, and, you know, you brought up an example of saying, you know, three by one, we're going to see cover 3. You know, what do you do with those teams who are good at mixing it up? I mean, there will be those Friday nights where guys come out and just line up in the coverage they're going to play and the indicators are easy. Or do you spend any time on coverage indicators and being able to point those out and show them, you know, the nuances on just alignment? Because, you know, 2-high shell is not a 2-high shell. There's going to be things within that alignment. And a lot of times it's really, I've found it to be a majority of teams. It's that boundary safety and his alignment on the hash. Sometimes he will be, you know, 5 yards inside of that hash mark, sometimes will be on it, sometimes will be outside of it. And a lot of times it has to do with that kid's ability to get where he needs to be as that coverage is going to rotate or he's going to buzz down, whatever it might be.
Yep. And you get a lot of defensive coordinators too, especially in the high school game, that are now starting to disguise coverage. Like I know we disguise the heck out of coverage at Central Catholic. You can never really get a read on what we're doing because Coach Brown does such a good job on the back end. And really, if you know what their technique is, you're going to have a better sense of what coverage they're playing. So some guys might play a cover 2 where they play a flat foot technique from that boundary safety or that field side safety where he might just sit for a second before he bails out of there to get to his half mark. So really trying to study, looking at the 2 safeties or looking at the 1-high structure, whatever it may be, if you got 1 safety in the game, 2 safeties, but really breaking it down and looking at, okay, what does this kid do when in his normal cover 4 backpedal? What are the corners alignments in our 2x2? Are they going to be squatted with the inside shade? Because if they're going to be inside shade, we might be seeing a cover 2. If they're going to be outside with their butts to the sideline and we're seeing a slow backpedal out, that's going to give us a good indicator that they're playing cover 4 to that side. Just little things like that, trying to see a DB's technique and where what his feet are doing pre-snap is a really good indicator. But there's times where you might get something pre-snap, like you said, and then post-snap, something completely different happens. So that's where, you know, and that's kind of in a later talk might be where, you know, we're going through a past concept. That turns into, like, we read a lot of things. We don't read a lot of things just based off of what this one safety might do. We read a lot of things progression-wise. That way, if somebody's not where they're supposed to be, like I've told the quarterback all week, he can move on to another progression within his pass concept to give him an opportunity to complete a ball. Because defenses do a lot of crazy things nowadays, so it's important to try to kind of, you know, identify a pre-snap and then post-snap what's happening. And if somebody's not in the right spot post-snap, I still have options to go other places.
I found it. You know, in coverage, there will be that one guy. Like I said, a lot of teams, it's that boundary safety. Sometimes it could be a corner. You'll see that a corner will, you know, cheat in alignment because of the way he has to play. Or it could even be a linebacker. But there's something in that combination that tells you. And then, you know, the thing we would like to do, because you can take a look post-snap, and a lot of times it will be in that first step of your drop, you could see where that guy's going or the technique he's playing. But the other thing we found to be a very useful tool in fleshing that out and being able to see what they're going to do is cadence. Because, you know, that guy who does need to move, right, he might not be playing on that hash. He's rotating. I mean, if you're getting some movement, you'll see him lean or you'll see him take his first step or something. You know you got him then when you could do that. So I think cadence is a good tool too.
Cadence is a good one. And then anytime you throw a motion into whatever kind of concept you're doing, whatever your play may be, anytime you throw a motion in two for high school, that's one of the best indicators, you know, for a quarterback to see, okay, let's break it down even in simpler terms. Are they playing man or zone? Screw whether we find out if it's cover two or cover three or cover four, whatever it may be, palms coverage. Are they playing man or zone? Because sometimes that's all you can get to with a high school kid. Is he playing man or zone? Now within his progression, his 1 to 2 to 3, he knows where he can go with the football based off of, okay, I'm seeing man or I'm seeing zone. And with our wide receivers, that's what we don't break it down any further with our wideouts. Rather, we just say man or zone. Are they playing zone here or are they playing man? And then based off of whatever structure or concept we've got called, they know where their landmarks are supposed to be and what spots they're supposed to get to. Because the last thing you want to do is confuse a kid. And the last thing you want to do on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday is to confuse a guy. And the last person you want to confuse on the offense is the quarterback. So doing that all that pre-study time, so to speak, during the week can, you know, try to alleviate some of those pressures during a Friday night.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the stuff you're talking about, you know, just getting some coverage clues from motion, they're doing those things on Sunday, that exact same thing. Are they man or zone? That in and of itself is going to help you a ton as a quarterback if you can understand those types of things. I think that's, you know, as I've, you know, the last 2 years I've worked with some high school quarterbacks, and every single week we'll go through and, you know, we'll look at the opponent film together. We'll talk about their game plan together and, you know, looking at what other teams do against certain defenses, it's very underutilized, those kinds of things. Either the cadence aspect of it, you could tell that they're always going on that same kind of rhythm and tempo, or you don't see motion at all. Some very simple things you can do. And to me, it doesn't matter if you are a no-huddle, up-tempo team. You could build some of those things into your offense very easily. I know, you know, we would do it at the college level, and honestly, like the cadence stuff, we just put that on the quarterback. Do you need a clue in this? Like, get yourself a clue. Do you want to motion a guy over and back to be able to see? You know, if you need it, use it. Use that tool. And we created, you know, a few procedural things that made it simple in order for a guy to be able to do that.
Well, that's the, you know, when you talk about too, I think that, you know, when you talk, especially at the high school level, when, you know, a lot of times if you got an offensive-minded head coach, he's the guy calling the plays. He's the guy coaching the quarterbacks too. So there's a lot of duty on top of a head, you know, being a head coach that he's going to take care of. So having, you know, those intimate film sessions with your quarterback is something that might go, you know, not only unnoticed, but it's something that might not even happen. And I'm not saying this is for everybody, but I'm just generalizing that it could happen. So your guy on a Friday night might have no idea what he's looking at. And that's the thing that I like to watch. You know, when you talk about when we film all of our practices, you got the sideline view and then you've got the rear view, the end zone cam. You know, when a quarterback takes a drop, look at where his eyes are at. Are his eyes in the right spot first and foremost? Because if his eyes aren't in the right spot, you know how high school kids are, their eyes tend to wander. So if his eyes aren't in the right spot, you know, you can then say to him, okay, what are you looking at here? I know you're going through your progression, but what are we looking at here? What guy are we supposed to be looking at? What coverage indicator are you supposed to be keying on here? That way we can get into our 1 to 2 to 3, whatever it may be. You know, so that's just, it's just little tidbits like that you can give your guy, you know, in order for him to have success on game day.
So, Coach, you also mentioned the read game portion of this too. And, you know, modern offenses, more and more, the quarterback is a huge part of the run game. But I agree with you 100%. It's so important to, again, you know, in your breakdown of an opponent, understand the kind of technique that a certain defensive player is going to be playing and what are his capabilities. So for example, you know, simple zone read stuff, you would tell a quarterback as a starting point, this guy, you know, turns his shoulders, he's going down the line, you could pull the ball and go, you know, but you have to evaluate. You can't make it absolutes because there may be that guy, that dude who can, you know, kill all those rules because of the way he's able to play it. So you have to really understand that opponent and what you're trying to do, and as well as what he's going to do to you and what he's capable of.
Right. It can't be, in my terms, it can't be so black and white because, you know, guys are, you know, for instance, we had a player, Jacoby Crowell, ended up hurting himself towards the end of the year, was a big loss for our defense, but he played the read game so well. He could shuffle down, keep his off arm free, and could make a tackle on a pull, could make a tackle on a give, and there really was nothing you could do, you know, as a play caller, even as a quarterback, to kind of trick him. So, you know, that was good for our guys' development, but, you know, studying that from Monday to Thursday and really trying to hone in on, okay, this guy might shuffle down, but he can recover really quickly. Because what are you going to, at all levels, if you're playing in the read game, you're going to tell your quarterback, okay, if he shuffles down, you're pulling it and you're going. If he sits, you're handing the football. Well, sometimes guys can shuffle down and then recover and play it pretty well. So your quarterback's got to have a good idea going into Friday night of what kind of guy am I dealing with. Is the left side end, is he more of a physical freak and he can do everything and recover? And is the right side end more of a guy that, and this is, I'm talking if you're playing a traditional, you know, 4-3 team that's going to give you two ends. Is the boundary end more of a guy that just kind of sits and he allows the mesh point to happen and doesn't want anything, it doesn't want to get beat by the quarterback? It's important for your cue to know those things, you know, before he goes in on Friday, instead of just that basic bland rule of, okay, if he shuffles down, you're going to pull it and run. If he sits, you're going to hand the football off. Because you know that a lot of times when you coach football and you get into a game, basic things don't happen all the time, or what you tell guys where guys are supposed to be doesn't happen all the time. So you guys got to be able to read and react and continue to play.
Definitely. Well, Coach, we'll keep moving on with the week. I you know, wanted to just get a little bit more detail on a couple of those things that we talked about, the breakdown there. So I'll let you continue on with the work you do as you move towards a Friday.
Monday, obviously, we do a formation cut up. So we'll just go through all of our formations. We'll go through, of the team that we're playing against. We'll go through the team that they might have been playing against that gave them a 2x2, give them a 3x1, give them a double tight look. And just to see basic lineup, how are these guys going to line up? Then, like I said, we'll go over a scouting sheet, go over all the DBs. This is one where I really hone in on, and I'll talk to my guy, like, is there a ball hawk in the back end that we need to be aware of? Is there a guy that we can pick on that we need to be aware of? Because that's where your shot plays come in, and then that's where your turnovers come in. If you don't account for a guy that's a ball hawk in the back end, you might – like, we got screwed this year on a missile screen when a guy just jumped in front of us because he was a ball hawk and was a freelancer, and I didn't do a very good job of telling my guy during the week, we need to be aware of this guy just not playing responsibility and freelancing. And so the second time around, we ended up playing in the playoffs, we were aware of that. And then we'll go over a blitz report too. Coverage report, like I said, blitz report, kind of see what their top blitzes are. So then a Tuesday – film review with our queue. This is after practice for about 30 to 40 minutes. You kind of just go over all blitzes and coverages to whatever pass concepts and run concepts you might you might be thinking you are going to run for that Friday night. So you kind of have a good idea. And we're a staff that kind of just likes to add as the week goes on. Like, we will add literally up until the last minute. You know, some guys like to have the game plan set in stone on Monday or Tuesday, and that's what they rep all week. If it looks good, keep it. If it looks bad, scrap it. But we kind of just like to add and tweak because we're constantly watching film and going over those things just to try to get any edge that we can. And then we'll watch Tuesday's practice because we'll upload our film right away. So we'll watch Tuesday's practice. We're getting a good idea of what we want to do on offense. You know, just little things here and there that we're picking up on, things that he might have done wrong within a progression, you know, through practice. And, you know, kind of just gauging his sense of what he's going to see on Friday night. Because by Tuesday, after the films I'll watch, you should kind of have a pretty good idea of what you're going to see on Friday night. A Wednesday is kind of we're going to go over that D-line deal. So we're going to watch the two DNs specifically, because up until this point, we've watched the back half, we've watched the coverages, we've watched the blitzes and what might happen, you know, with that back end. So now we're going to watch the D-line and kind of see, you know, which are some dudes up front. What are the two DNs doing? If you face two DNs in a 4-3 structure, or if you get, you know, an odd structure, what is that 4-eye doing? What is the nose doing? You know, we'll kind of just gauge and watch and see, you know, which guy likes to slow play in match point, which guy likes to dive, which guy likes to just read things out. And then what we'll do as well is whatever RPOs we are going to run for that week, we'll get a really good sense of which RPO guys they are. So for instance, if we're in a 3-by-1 and we're running traditional stick RPO with zone mesh, if number 9 on the opposite team is the guy that we're always going to be reading for that RPO, our quarterback's going to know, okay, when we call zone stick, RPO, I know that I've got to get my eyes on number 9. That way he has a good sense of where I'm going with the football, what I'm reading in terms of the RPO world. And then we'll watch Wednesday practice after that, roll through that really quickly, you know, trying to clean up any mistakes that may have happened. And then Thursday really is just, we just review anything that the quarterback wants to see if he's not comfortable with. And then we'll go over like our shot plays that we like for the week on the board. And then I will show him a cut up of whatever shot plays that defense may have gotten beat on. So then that comes back into play of which guy can we pick on here and which guy is a ball hawk and we kind of got to stay away from. That way it gives our quarterback a good sense of, you know, okay, we can take advantage of this guy if we call cross. We can take advantage of this guy if we call four birds, whatever it may be. And then Friday, I call it, it's just the go get money day. Friday is, you know, obviously you're going to go make your money now, go play ball. You should be ready to go. So then Friday, I'll give the quarterback a tip sheet leading up to the game. We'll have a quarterback meeting at 4:15 every day. All quarterbacks involved will review anything that needs to be reviewed. We'll give him a tip sheet in terms of just last-second reminders on things. So, for instance, like that 3-by-1 stick RPO, you are reading number 8 on this RPO. You are reading number 24 on this RPO. You know, if we run the powers concept with the backside glance route, you're reading this cat on that RPO. That way he's got every little reminder, you know, everything should be cleaned up at that point, and he's got every little reminder of what he needs to do and where he needs to go with the football in terms of his gameplay. That's our week. And then when you get to a Saturday after you played the game, you know, I think grading out is really important. I think it's really tough when you just go into a film session and you tell the kid you need to do this, and that better. When they can actually see what a physical grade looks like, how they grade out, and it's nothing special for coaches out there that would like to implement something like this. It's literally just a plus and minus system. So, you know, if your guy did his job on that play, you get a plus. If your guy did not do his job, he gets a minus. And, you know, you tally those up. And that could be as simple as if you're running tight zone and your quarterback doesn't carry out his run fake, he's getting a minus on that play. Because later in the game, when you want to pull and run, you know, he may not be able to pull and run because he's not really getting much influence from a D end because of not carrying out his fake previously. So he needs to be aware of those things. It's not just focusing on where you went with the football in the pass game. So, you know, grading him in a plus minus perspective, that way he knows exactly where he stands. And 85% is championship level, we call it, or championship grade out. And that's where he wants to be. That's where we need him to be to win a football game. And then, you know, those grade sheets, it's really cool because you can kind of see was there a point in time where he kind of lapsed throughout the game, where he got a couple minuses in a row, and how big of a swing happened offensively or defensively for your team throughout that portion of the game? Did our quarterback play really poor, and was there four or five minuses in a row? We had a couple three and outs, and then all of a sudden we were down a score, you know? So you can kind of tell your guy, hey, you're the key cog to this whole thing. You know, your poor play here, here, and here throughout these three series really caused us to get a 14-point flip in the game, and now we're playing from behind. So he can kind of understand that going into the following week and understand where his grade sheet should be the following week in terms of, and that just kind of keeps things in his mind, like, I got to carry out my fakes every single time, otherwise I'm going to get a poor grade. I got to go to the right place for the football, otherwise I'm going to get a poor grade. And you might have those plays where you get a plus minus, where it's kind of iffy. You could give him a plus or a minus. And I'll always err on the side of giving him, if it was a successful play, he could, like RPOs, for instance, you could have a play where he hands the ball off on a zone read. And if he handed it off, our running back, they got 40 yards. But based off of his key read, you know, whatever it may be, that Sam linebacker, he played run. So he pulled him through the stick route and got 8-9 yards on the play. Still a good play. We could have had a bigger one. So I'm not going to go back and dissect it and say, hey, you got a minus here because you should have gave the ball because you would have got a 40-yard touchdown run. That's not just, I gave him a plus on that. You know what I mean? So that way he, you know, it was still a plus play for us. That way he knows that immediate reinforcement to them of knowing exactly where they stand, you know, can help their play tremendously in terms of, you know, just going into practice the next week.
Couple things that I think are important. Number one, I think what you do with the grade, and especially trying to pinpoint the impact of some of those minuses, or honestly, you could do it on the other side, the impact of some of those pluses as to what's happening overall in the game, I think carries a lot more value and a lot more in terms of teachable moments than saying, here's your 85%, right? The game is never played without context. And so the more you can tie those plus or minuses, the more you can tie that percentage to the context of how it affected the game, I think is very impactful on how that kid's going to think about those things when he hits practice again, or when he has the opportunity to do some of those things right. I think that really is the game changer in why you grade, right? It's not to give a grade.
You know how the game of football goes too. I mean, everybody, Monday morning quarterback or couch coach likes to sit there and point to one play. For instance, greatest example ever is the Ohio State play and the targeting play or the score that got pulled off the board with the catch and the fumble or whatever it may have been. Everybody likes to point to that one play and say, this is what lost Ohio State the game. Well, no, there was a multitude of things that lost Ohio State to the game. You can go back and look and look at the red zone deficiencies and see if Ohio State didn't score in the red zone they needed to. So let's put it on its head now and say to my quarterback, I can tell him, hey, we didn't lose the game because you threw a pick at the end of the game. We lost the game because we didn't score for three consecutive drives because of your maybe misread on a zone read or a power read late in the red zone, you know, series seven or whatever it may have been. You know, this is what lost us the game here was your inconsistent play from drive three to six, you know, three, four, five, and six. That's what lost us the game because if we score points there, we're not even in this scenario of making it come down to this one play, you know, at the end of the game. So that's kind of, it gives your guy a visual, you know, like we said, you know, for in order for him to really know where he stands. And that way it's out there for everybody. He knows where he stands and he knows if he played piss poor or he knows if he balled out that night.
I think the other thing I wanted to touch on with you is, you know, you talked about you and your coaches, you know, tweaking over the course of the week, adding, deleting, whatever it might be. I guess what you didn't really touch on a lot there was the quarterback input into those things, because you and I and any other coach can stand up on a whiteboard and draw touchdowns all day long. But if our guy's not confident in what he's able to do in those or not clear in his understanding, you know, we got some issues. So how much input into, you know, what you guys are going to continue to carry over the course of the week or put in, you know, I think back to having Andrew Coverdale on here and, you know, he talked about his love it or like it list with the quarterback where they would sit down and just go through all the plays, you know, at the end of the week and You know, he'd give him a the quarterback give him a simple rating on it. So for you, you know, what's the input for the quarterback? What's the feedback that he's able to give as far as how you guys are going to shape that final call sheet?
See, it's funny that you bring that up because we had a first-year starter this year, a guy that played JV ball last year, and he's not a very big dude. He's probably about 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", on a good day, maybe with cleats on, about 160 pounds. But he's kind of Johnny Manziel-esque, as we call it. So he was a first-year starter, came off a nasty ankle injury, and really was not – we didn't know if he was going to be ready to go until about mid-July. And we ended up having a four-horse race for quarterback all the way up until about our third scrimmage, which was unique and also nerve-wracking at the same time because you had four dudes that were really playing well, but then you had – you know, you're kind of in that if you got three or four quarterbacks, you got no quarterbacks. So, you know, I wouldn't say we put the training wheels on him to start the year, but he didn't have much input. But as the year went on, you know, in my individual meetings with him, you know, we would go through the game plan. I would ask him, what do you like? Or I would go back and tell Coach Dempsey and say, hey, he's been really poor on X, Y, and Z this week. I don't know if we can have that in the game plan. And it would be pulled because it wouldn't look good. So it was more so of not him directly saying on the call sheet, hey, I like this, this, and this. It was more so of what would film look like during the week in practice? What did he do well during the week? And, you know, we're going to keep this in or we're going to X that because he really didn't grasp that. And he was comfortable enough telling me, hey, like, I don't feel good with that. So that's probably got to go. And we would pull it. And he would also say, hey, I really, really like that. And we knew he liked that and we would keep it in, you know, so he didn't have as much say, I would say, but he will, I think, going forward, just because now he's a second year guy. We know what we got with him. We can kind of build off of what he does really well, which he doesn't have a super live arm. He's not a guy that's going to throw it 40 times and throw for, you know, 500 yards in a game and just dissect people all night in the back end. He's a guy that's going to complete good. He can throw a really good deep ball. He's going to be really, really efficient. So we might only throw it 15 times in a game, but he's going to complete 12 or 13 of those 15 and still throw for 350 because his shots are going to be big shots. So going into next year, he's going to have more of that say of what he likes and what he doesn't like. And that's just going to come with more comfortability with him in the offense and, you know, Coach Dempsey trusting him and myself trusting him and going from there.
Like you brought up a little important point there. You got three quarterbacks, you got no quarterbacks. When you get into that situation, you know, when you are in essentially a quarterback race beginning of camp or through camp, what helps you start to make that decision on who's going to get the job? How are you evaluating that from day to day, over the course of the week, over the course of camp?
Yeah, so those guys are going to get graded out every practice. And I know it might be tedious to do that, and it might be really time-consuming. But again, this goes all the way back to those are your days of doing the grunt work stuff that nobody wants to do because at the high school level, you don't have many GAs. You are the GA as well as being the position coach. So any extra thing you want done, you got to do it yourself. Every practice is graded, and it's really the thing that we were kind of looking for was playmaking ability and efficiency, because efficiency really lacked in the last couple years in terms of the pass game. So the guy that ended up being more efficient, you know, ended up being the guy that won out, and the guy that kind of just I'm a big guy, and I want our quarterback to play with some swagger a little bit. I want him to. I've got a motto for myself, and it's called fearlessly be yourself, and that goes all the way back to, you know, being a young coach and trying to find your way. Don't try to emulate somebody, just be yourself. Same thing with your quarterback. Don't try to emulate somebody, just do what you do and do it well. And, you know, so like I said, we had four guys in the race. We kind of dwindled two down, and really, because when you're going through 7-on-7s in the summer, everybody's going to complete balls on air. Everybody's going to complete balls against coverage too in 7-on-7 because, A, it's not real football. I mean, you're not going to get a live rush. You're not going to feel that. You're not going to see how your guy responds when he gets popped the first time and then hops back up. Our backup quarterback, who was actually Brian Wright, who was the OC at Toledo, just took the Pittsburgh State job. Our backup quarterback was his son. Jake Wright. And Jake was in the race up until the very end, ended up losing out to Bishop Vargas, ended up being the guy. But Jake was in the race until the very end. And, you know, I thought we scrimmaged Akron Hovind week two of scrimmage season. And Jake got popped one time by one of their kids that just got an offer from Alabama. And he popped right back up. And that told me, okay, this kid can play. Because we kind of had doubts whether or not he would be able to play at this level, because he's kind of a string bean. He just got a really good live arm. And that told me, okay, this kid can play. He's still in the race. Because I thought right there he was going to pull himself out by just getting this clock clean, and then now he's done. But that told me, okay, he's still in the race. But then once you get to, like, that second, third scrimmage, some people do two scrimmages. We do three. Once we got to that third scrimmage, we kind of had a good idea of, okay, Bishop's going to be the guy. We let him play it out. And as long as he didn't do something catastrophic to lose it, he was going to be the guy, just based off of his efficiency numbers, taking care of the football, and, you know, having his team rally around him. Because I think that you can get lost in a guy's numbers too. How well do you move the football with a certain guy in? If you move the football really well with one guy, and then another guy's really efficient, but you don't move the football, you might have to go with the guy that gives you the opportunity to drive the football down the field consistently. And Bishop ended up being that guy, and his teammates rallied around him. And he was a guy that kind of has respect of a lot of his teammates and carries himself with that swagger. So that's kind of the things that we were looking for, you know, because that's when he plays his best, is when he's free and he's just being himself. And he's got kind of that, he's a gamer, is what I say. He's got that gamer attitude. And, you know, he ended up clearing himself in the race and being the guy, and then started all 13 games for us this year. 14 games, I should say, excuse me.
Yeah, I do think it is a very tough time. And I think you got to look at a number of factors going into that. And you're right, 7-on-7 can only tell you so much. I think back to, you know, my days at Division III, that's really all we had in the spring because we didn't have pads on. So, you know, we're going through and trying to figure out who's going to be listed number one in camp. And so it was 7-on-7 was the only tool. But, you know, for us, it was tied to our passing game. And a lot of that is a combination of R4 and Dan Gonzalez's axe concept as far as our read progression. So a lot of it was timing based, right? We want to help our protection. We want the ball out quick. So we would look at release time, their accuracy, and their decision-making. But then, you know, that was the main part of their grade. We also would look at where are they going in the progression, right? Were they able to rip that first look explosive play down the field off their plant and throw? Were they able to hit an intermediate route? Or did this kid go through the majority of spring ball just hitting checkdowns, right? Because his percentage might be higher. That's not going to give you the full picture. So you want to be as encompassing as you can as you start to look at the grade. It might be and for us it would always back down during the season. We weren't necessarily looking at that, but when we were in a competition, we really wanted to know. We wanted to be distinct, and every day we wanted to be able to say to those guys, here's where you're at, here's what you need to do. Because you do want that guy who's going to take, you know, the shots down the field or hit the intermediate routes, not the guy who's going to panic and just check down every time.
Well, and it's funny that you say that, because it was really tough because we didn't, sometimes you get those competitions where you got two guys that are kind of similar in what they do and how they play their game. But we really had four different dudes that kind of were all different. Like, we started with the senior, the guy that was the most experienced, the guy that knew the offense, was not really, he wasn't going to do anything flashy, but he was just going to manage and he was going to be a game manager. Then you come down to the junior who ended up being our guy. He was more of the flashy playmaker guy. He could kind of do all things. Coach Dempsey always said he was a riverboat gambler, which he did do things like that at times, but sometimes that stuff pays off for you. And you want a guy to kind of be explosive as well. And then we had the sophomore who, you know, the other guy kind of took himself out of the race a little earlier than expected. But then we had the sophomore, which was Coach Wright's son. And he was the guy that could just sling it all across the yard, kind of a string bean type of kid, but could really drive the ball down the field better than the other two. And so that was kind of, and Coach Dempsey's always been a run first type of offense with a lot of running quarterback. And this kid completely broke the mold because he was not that at all. So we had the conversations of,
we've got it, and we were planning on doing this anyway, integrating more pass game and you know, part of the reasons why bringing myself in, RPO game and things like that, playing with tempo. But would we have to change dramatically? Because he couldn't run the football at all if he ended up being the guy. And I think when you go through these competitions, it's important to as well, like, mix it up every day. So, like, try to get as many team reps with each guy as you can, but mix it up. Maybe one day the guy that you think is going to be the starter, have him roll with the threes, or have him roll if you're lucky enough to go three deep with your varsity squad, have him roll with the threes and see how he handles that. Have him, if you're in a 7-on-7, have him roll with the ones one day, and then you come back for another 7-on-7, have him roll with the twos or the threes the next day. See how he handles that, because I think that's going to tell a lot too, because everybody knows playing quarterback is one of the toughest things to do in all of sports. So him being able to deal with that adversity and A, not pout, B, still continue to coach and B, pick his teammates up and still continue to, you know, do everything correctly, even though he might have not taken all the ones reps that day, is important for you to see as a coach as well, because you can kind of gauge what kind of mindset you're dealing with each kid.
I agree with that. Coach, as we wrap up here, I want to step back to a little bit on your background. You had the opportunity to work with Coach Babers, Coach Lewis, who's now the head coach at Kent State, Coach Jenks. I mean, just some really good football coaches, really good leaders. So stepping away from all the X's and O's you've learned, and you've done an incredible job learning that side of the game. But talk to us a little bit about the most important lesson maybe you learned just about, I guess, coaching in general or being a leader in general from having been around those guys.
I think it goes back to just, you know, it kind of goes back to like my motto. Like if you follow me on Twitter, you see my Twitter bio, I got hashtag fearlessly be yourself. And that's kind of just the motto that I've kind of taken and learned from everybody that I've learned from an inordinate amount of guys that have been really good, like Craig Smith and Anthony Wayne. Some people may or may not know, people close to the Northwest Ohio area know him, but he was a wing team guy that just, he was my first interaction with coaching. He's a guy that I played for. He's a guy that I hold near and dear that I would do anything for. And he did different things that, you know, Coach Dempsey does now. And just, you know, everybody's different and not every way is the right way. There's different ways. Every path is different. There's different ways to travel on it. I just think that, you know, especially as a young guy and a young coach, you got to stay true to yourself. Don't try to be somebody you're not. That's what, you know, Coach Jenks always told me, is that don't try to be somebody you're not. Go be you. You know, if you like to yell and scream and hoot and holler while you coach, go be you. Do that. If you're more of a reserved guy and you only yell and scream when you think that it means most, then go be you and do that. You know, and just really trying to perfect your craft every day, learning those things from like guys like Seth Dagey. Like that dude, he's going to get a D1 job here soon. He's an offensive analyst at USC, and some people may know he played quarterback at Texas Tech, was our receivers coach at Bowling Green. That dude grinds like no other. And I kind of just learned from him as well as Coach Dempsey, because he grinds as well. You just got to, if you want to be successful in this profession, you got to work. And along the way, be yourself. Don't try to be somebody you're not, because if you try to emulate somebody that you're not, usually you're going to fall flat on your face, because you're not true to your core values, and you're not true to, you know, the people that you're teaching to, because the kids can see right through that stuff. The kids can see whether you're full of it or whether you really got their back and you're a real dude. And so that's kind of just the mentality that I try to kind of take with me every day, is just fearlessly be yourself and be a guy that stays true to himself and just grind, man. Work, and good things are going to happen.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time, and I'm hoping next fall that, you know, our team here, which my son will be a senior, Avon Lake and Toledo Central Catholic meet. I'm not sure how they'll bracket that, so that would either be the state semifinal or the state championship. So it'd be good to see those two teams on the field. You know, best of luck to you guys as you prepare for 2020 here. And for our listeners, you mentioned your Twitter handle. Share where they can reach out and get a hold of you.
So obviously, Twitter, Coach, it's @coach_JLinke, LINDKE is my Twitter handle. People can call me if they want. My number is 419-389-2351. Love to talk ball anytime. And then my email is Josh Lindke, LINDKE, and then the number 15 at gmail.com. And then if anybody is going to the Glaser Clinic in Cleveland, March 13th through the 15th, I believe it is, I will be speaking there, three different sessions there as well. Hitting on a lot of topics that we talked about tonight, preparing your quarterback from week to week, talking a little pre and post snap picture in terms of the pass game, RPO world, and then talking, you know, we shot plays off of like cross concept, air raid cross concept. We run a lot of that stuff. So I'll be talking about those things at the Glacier as well. So come on out, and any questions, you can shoot them on over to me. I'd love to talk ball.
Well, Coach, again, I appreciate you taking the time, and definitely we'll be looking you up at the Glacier in Cleveland, and we'll have to connect out there as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Keith. I appreciate you having me on, and appreciate everything you're doing for USA football and whatnot, and just, you know, spreading the wealth of the game, man. So we're high school, college, and pro. And like I said, appreciate you having me on. We'd love to come back sometime.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.